So our text reader today, Kylie, is going to read our teaching text for us today.
But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness.
And God said, let there be light, and saw that it was good. And God said, let there be sky, and saw that it was good. And God said, let there be land and sea, and saw that it was good. And God said, let the waters teem with living creatures, and saw that it was good. And God said, let the lands have living creatures and produce life, and saw that it was good. And then God said, let us make you. And saw that it was very good. But the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness. My prayer this week has gone something like this. Lord, save me from giving a sermon on religious moralism when it comes to goodness that fails to awaken the imagination and ties my people down with heavy burdens that you have no intention for them to carry. But also, save me from giving a sermon that relativizes your longing for our lives that to reflect the depth of your goodness. So I'm hoping to live somewhere there in between. The Hebrew word for good is this word tov. It's spelled with a B, but it's pronounced with a V. Let's say that together. Tov. That's the idea of something being good. Each and every one of you were created to be the summit of goodness in the world. That's why God says it was good, it was good, it was good, it was good, it was good. And then he looked at you and said, it is very good. In other words, when creation looks at you, it was meant to think that is the apex. That's the summit. That's the pinnacle. There's a lot of words for that in the thesaurus. That's the height of my goodness in all of the world is you. And yet, life doesn't always feel that way. I walked into Burton Elementary to be with my student a couple weeks ago, Thursday, after that shooting. By the way, Affinity Mentoring, I'm so grateful for the work Affinity is doing. I'm just so grateful that our church gets to be attached to the development and formation of the next generation in the school system. It's just so beautiful to partner with the good work teachers are doing, and I'm so thankful for that. And their gala's coming up, March 22, shameless plug. I love what they're up to. And I walked into the school, and I felt vulnerable. I felt really unsafe. And I don't remember as a student ever walking into my school at 8 a.m. feeling vulnerable. And I thought to myself, what does it feel like today? What's that noise? High frequencies. Danny, do you know what that is? That's not good necessarily. I had this moment where I thought, I wonder what it feels like to be a student in today's generation. Going into that where it feels like at any moment catastrophe could break out. And I felt this gap between what I read in Genesis 1 in everyday life in the 21st century. Do you know what I mean? Like this sort of gap that wait, this is the way God intended it to be, and this is the way it feels even to walk into mentoring, this gap that is here. And for me, it's not just that this gap is out there somewhere that needs to be solved and put to rights, even though that's true, that what I realize is this gap is true in here. And that even in my finest moments, I'm this cocktail of mixed motives. And so like when the scriptures talk about the fall, which is a part of our narrative theology, it's this past event that we point to explain our present feelings of incompleteness, right? It's the language that we have to say, this has been always happening. This thing happening, it's not just that it's broken in me. It's been broken for a very long time. And that's how we begin to talk about that. That it is true that we're becoming whole, and yet we're broken. It's true that in many ways we're beginning to experience healing, and yet we're still in many ways wounded. It's very true that we are very generous people, yet I feel deep in my bones this commitment to greed, that we love and we lust. And so Paul's writing this letter to Galatia, to this church, saying what happens is the Spirit wants to pull you back into the fullness of goodness as God created us to live, because that is human flourishing. That's how the world was made. That goodness is about being in total alignment with the fabric of creation. I think often we just get down to this moralizing of do better and try harder and be gooder, whatever that means. And what God is saying, what the Spirit is pulling us into is be in alignment with the way in which I created you to flourish. Don't resist it and go against the grain. So what's happening in the fruit of the Spirit, we're in this series called Winter Fruit, where we're saying like we're so ready for spring and for summer, and yet God often does his deepest work in the dark when life is cold and sometimes feels hard. That the presence of God, whether you can fathom it or not, is actually there wanting to pull you into sowing kinds of seeds in your life that will in due season bear fruit. And so with the fruit of the Spirit, what it's saying is this. It's not some detached like love, joy, peace. Those are like good virtues to live into. It's saying, no, that's what God is like. God is love. God is peace. God is patience. And what the Spirit is wanting to do is to pull us into our divinity. The way in which God designed us to be fully human. The fruit of the Spirit is God's longing for your life. That the Spirit is an essential part of the deal. It's not just doctrine. It's not just sort of like attending things. It's not just giving money or being a part of things. It's actually saying that what the Spirit is wanting to do from the depths of who you are is to pull you into God's nature. So like, these aren't about you achieving things. These are about the Spirit cultivating a kind of life within you. And what God is saying through the Spirit is that God is wanting to sort of join you in your journey of transformation. So I eat apples on most days. Of all the apples in the apple kingdom, the Macintosh is my favorite. I love Macintosh apples. Oh, it's so amazing. There's this occasional morning where I'll pick up an apple and I'll look at it. Yeah, that's gonna happen, right? And you bite into it and it's dry and it's brown. It's so inconvenient. It looks so good. It looks so amazing. Yet what was externally good, it wasn't good all the way through. So when the text says in Genesis that God saw that it was good, what it's saying is that it's a kind of comprehensive goodness, that the sight of God penetrates through the external all the way to the internal thing. That tov is about a comprehensive goodness. So like, let's bring up this image of creation once again. When we look at this, God isn't just seeing the outside of what we see. God is seeing all the way through the molecular structure of creation. And is saying, I made it to be good, not just to the eye, but a different kind of seeing that God has all the way to the core of what this thing is. Not just the outside of the brush, but to the core of all creation. Without, by the way, this depth of goodness, we wouldn't have our sense of justice. You know, justice comes from the conviction that the goodness of God was originally woven into the fabric of creation. And when that goodness is corrupted, that's when our justice meters begin to go off. That's not how it was supposed to be. Systemic oppression and racism and division, that's not how God wired the universe to exist. So yes, the church groans to say that's not as it should be. That's not the way God said this is good. And amongst us especially, this is very good. There's this passage, I think it's Romans 8, where it says that creation itself is groaning for the people of God to take their rightful place as the pinnacle of goodness and to call out the good and the just and the true and the beautiful of all the world and to live into that. That's why Dr. King, because of goodness, it's why Dr. King could say things like, the arc of the moral universe is long but bends toward justice. Because we believe God wants to put this world back to good, back to right, fully, not just to the outside, but woven all the way through. And not just in creation, but in the creature itself called human. This word defined is agathos. Agathos is the Greek word. The name agatha is where that's derivative to it. Let me just define goodness for us this morning. Goodness is a quality of the inner life that yields a moral and spiritual compass moving out into the world. I think often what we go for is behavioral modification when we think about goodness. It's so much deeper than that. It's so much more mysterious than that. It's so much more imaginative to that. It's so much more committed and tied into the fabric of creation than just doing behavioralism. And yet, I think the common experience, if we were to just go around the room today, is that we feel a sense of our goodness lost. It's still there to varying degrees. But I can totally relate to Paul when, after following Jesus for many years, he said things like, I actually still don't do the things I want to do. And I end up doing the things I don't want to do. So first, let's begin here this morning. Let's take a deep breath, and let's take heart that, like Paul, none of us have it all together. And we can find community in that, of saying we don't have to be phony, and we don't have to put on masks and assume that the person sitting next to you has it right, and what's wrong with me, and why can't I actually do the things I want to do? And why don't I do the things I say I want to do? I think that's the first part of a journey of restoration and transformation, is just being honest about the human condition. But let's also be aware of this. We are sophisticated humans who, over the course of time, develop very mature strategies to fill the gap between Genesis 1 and everyday life. We are strategic. We are creative. We're good at trying to fill the gap on our own, because that sort of angst we feel about seeing the way God created the world and seeing what's happening in the world, seeing the way God created us to exist, and seeing what's true of my own heart in many ways. How do I fill the gap between Genesis 1 and everyday life? The first thing that I think a lot of people do is religion. And you're from West Michigan, many of you. You know this. You know how this story goes, right? Earning goodness, one good deed at a time. Very strategic, whether it's through your duty or obligation to one of the major religions, or to the religion of philanthropy, or the religion of self-help, or being a good person, whatever that means. By the way, being a good person means essentially that you've bought into the game of comparison and superiority. That I'm a good person based on what? Well, based on that person. In other words, I'm better. Right? That's not a great model to live into. That's not imaginative. It's actually pretty judgmental. And the whole idea is this, when it comes to the sort of religious spirit. The whole idea is that someone somewhere is counting. So your spreadsheet better not be in the red at the end of your life. That's the sort of thrust. That's the philosophy under it. The Good Place demonstrates this well. Take a look.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to your first day in the afterlife. You were all, simply put, good people. But how do we know that you were good? How are we sure? During your time on Earth, every one of your actions had a positive or a negative value, depending on how much good or bad that action put into the universe. Every sandwich you ate every time you bought a magazine, every single thing you did had an effect that rippled out over time and ultimately created some amount of good or bad. You know how some people pull into the breakdown lane when there's traffic and they think to themselves, ah, who cares? No one's watching. We were watching. Surprise! Anyway, when your time on Earth has ended, we calculate the total value of your life using our perfectly accurate measuring system. Only the people with the very highest scores, the true cream of the crop, get to come here to the good place. What happens to everyone else, you ask? Don't worry about it. The point is, you are here because you lived one of the very best lives that could be lived. And you won't be alone. Your true soulmate is here too. That's right. Soulmates are real. One of the other people in your neighborhood is your actual soulmate, and you will spend eternity together. So welcome to eternal happiness. Welcome to the good place. Sponsored by Otters Holding Hands While They Sleep. You know the way you feel when you see a picture of two otters holding hands? That's how you're going to feel every day.
Like some sort of equation that's happening in the mind where if I can just tally it up by the end of life, if I just do the right things all the time, then I can finally produce and fill the gap that I'm hoping to fill. Religion at its worst is presenceless devotion. The fruit of a highly religious life in the worst way is presenceless Christianity, where it's a life of striving to fill the gap. Some of you feel that. Some of you maybe came to Mars because you felt that for a long time, right? The other thing that we can move into is projection. We move sort of beyond religion and we project. In other words, over the course of time, you realize that even the amount of religion that you apply yourself to, it still sort of leaves this gap. You know it's true even in your own heart, of even our mixed motives and the way in which just we veer toward selfishness or make up your vice, whatever. In projection, what happens is we mask what we know to be true within and we put on a face. And we project to the world the image we want them to believe, right? Social media is like such a great sort of example of where this happens so much. Jesus had an opinion about this. Turn to page 913 in your shed Bible, if you will. It's Matthew 23. I'm just going to read a couple passages here. As I was preparing this week, this text just like kept coming back over and over. A couple verses. It's going to be verse 25 through 28, page 913. These are the words of Jesus, by the way. It says this, addressing this sort of reality. He says, "Woe to you teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside will also be clean." Verse 27, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." What happens in a life that's trying to fill the gap for goodness between Genesis 1 and the gap that we feel in everyday life is that over time, this can lead to a sort of loneliness where we feel like no one really knows what's going on within us. We feel like we can't be honest, that we have to mask. And the fruit of that is phony Christianity. And what happens in phony Christianity is eventually you go through the religious spirit and you move into projecting, hoping that you can fake it till you make it. We sort of get to a place where we just like get tired of the game. We get tired of the phony act, and it doesn't fill the gap that we feel. And so what often happens is you move from that place to a state of rebellion, where you just quit trying. And you think, what's the point? I'm just going to live out whatever I want. What is goodness anyway? It's just easier to do what I want and to say, who cares about what anyone thinks? These are often the stages of life that happen to try to fill the gap that we feel between what God has said is good and the right life to live into for flourishing and the way that we often feel in everyday life. Religion eventually stops working for us. So we fake it till we make it. We project until we finally stop playing the game and we just get tired of the charade. Now, I want to suggest that one of these stages is often where many in the life of the church just reside. And we just sort of keep doing this on repeat. And so when it comes to goodness, I want to suggest that there's a better way. And it's the way of participation, which someone said, well, what does that actually mean? Let's just back up for a second. The Trinity, which is a foundational mystery at the core of our faith, which isn't a riddle to be solved, it's a profundity to be awed at and to live into and to imagine. What happens in the Trinity is this. At the core of our faith, God is saying, I am a relation, not a transaction. Many of us grew up in religious systems where it was about transactional faith. God does this, I do that. I do that, God will do this. And so you have this sort of quid pro quo thing, this sort of this for that, this transaction that happens. And it leaves us feeling distant. It leaves God feeling like a sky god over there, up there, out there. And what's happening in the Trinity, what the early theologians wanted to say is that fundamentally, God is a relation. God is not a transaction within God's self. And what God is inviting you into is that relation, not a transaction. In other words, we are invited into a dance of life, not a duty of obligation. Can I get an amen? Let me say this again, West Michigan. You were invited into a dance of life and not the duty of obligation. And when we get caught into that kind of imaginative sphere, goodness becomes a longing of ours because we get to participate with the way in which God created the world to be. I believe churches that make central the person of Jesus and the presence of the Holy Spirit are the ones that will flourish in the road ahead. Listen, you look at the stats, you see American Christianity is in significant decline. I don't think it's a moment for fear. I don't think it's a moment for like coming up with sophisticated strategies to get people back. I think it's to say, hey, what if we took the God who takes us seriously? What if we believe God's presence is here? What if we believe that moving toward presence and not systems, freedom rather than control, openness rather than narrow-mindedness. What if that's what God is longing for, a people God can dance with who have moved beyond these sorts of duties and into the imagination? So how does this work? How do we grow into the goodness that God intended for us? I just want to suggest a few things and then we'll call it a day. First is this. You have to start with an aim. Following Jesus, becoming like Jesus doesn't happen on accident. It takes a radical intention. And the first thing that has to happen is that our faith has to have an aim. If it doesn't, it just becomes arbitrary. It just becomes random. And often I feel like what happens is you begin to ask questions later in your life like, wait, why am I doing this? Why do I read my Bible? Why do I even attend church often or occasionally? Like, why do I pray? Why do I give when I have plenty? And why do I help out with 20 leaders? Like, you can fast forward 30 years of your life of doing things and begin to ask questions like, what's it all about? I don't feel any different. I just feel older, right? That's the spirit of religion at its worst, who has lost sight of our aim. Our aim is not random. Our aim is Jesus. And our longing around here is Christ likeness, which means the Beatitudes must become central for what our way of being. The Sermon on the Mount has to become the constitution of which we reorient our whole lives around. The life and ministry of Jesus, the death and resurrection as one event that leads to an unfolding of life, that has to become central for how we think about what it is that we're about, because the societal norms are not the way of Jesus. So how do we reimagine life with that kind of aim that gives reason to do the things that we do? His life is the way of flourishing. And the Spirit living in you, who is goodness in pure form, is calling you into conformity with his image. The way to say it is this: the why of our faith has to come before the what. And I meet many Christians today who are bored because the what dominates and they no longer have a why. They don't know why anymore they're doing what they're doing. It just makes sense to brunch in that kind of a world. What's the point in being part of a church? If he is not your why, you will eventually burn out in this thing called Christianity. I love what Athanasius said about it. He said he became what we are, that we might become what he is. I've taught on this before. The first time I read that, I thought, that's why I exist. That's worth my life. That is the meaning of human fulfillment. Second thing is this: after you negotiate, navigate your aim, your transcendent point, something beyond yourself that's bigger than just the what you're doing, it has a wider call, a why behind it, you move into name. After you aim, you have to name. You have to get clear about where it is that you're longing for increased goodness in your life. This isn't behavioral modification. This is saying, Christ is my aim. How do I live a life that begins to name the things that are not the way in which they should be? This is where our directions come into so much help for me. Our six directions, which is why we have these little circles, by the way. I don't know if you ever noticed that, of inward and outward and upward and backward and withward and forward. One of the reasons I moved here is I wanted to live into that scope of discipleship and formation with you. And it's interesting for me, I omit the outward if I'm not careful. I get so busy, and I'm so busy with the church world that I forget, oh yeah, there's a bigger world out there that God loves. I mean, that's why I'm involved in affinity mentoring, because I have so much to learn from this fifth grader who teaches me so much every day. Or every week that we spend time together. And like when I moved here, I just became so sort of like desirous for the community of Mars Hill, and that's beautiful, but I began to ask questions like, how am I connected to the larger world? And so one of these directions pull us into the image of Jesus. They expand us further into the goodness that God longed for us. And I had to name that if I'm not careful, I'm going to omit the outward direction. I'm going to be really good at inward and contemplative spirituality. I'm going to be really good at forward and pursuing the Spirit. I'm going to be really good at backward, and I'm pretty good at withward. Outward is a natural omission for my life. It gets crouched out. And what happens is this: I circle the things I'm good at, and I call that following Jesus. And that's good. But all the while, the Spirit is whispering into my soul, you're forgetting the world that I love, and I want you to be a part of it. And so it pulls me into an orbit of seeking the presence of God beyond myself. I wonder for you this morning, where is it easy for you to omit? Where is it easy for you to omit? Forward, it's an onward journey. It's taking the next step. But I would also say it's a pursuit of the Spirit, the sort of loss of control into whatever it is you want from my life, God. Inward, that sort of sense of solitude. Backward, how do I graft myself standing on the shoulders of those who have come behind before me? I love our directions. So you have to name it. First you aim, and then you name, where is there a lack? Where can I grow? And then you have to move into this. Practices. It wasn't enough for me to just say, I want to grow in the outward direction. I needed a practice. Thursdays, 1:30, with Da Vinci Brown at Burton Elementary. I can do that. I can do that. I can move into a practice that will help me move further into that. I love what Richard Foster says. Everyone thinks of changing the world. But where are those who think of changing themselves? Which, by the way, is how the first thing gets done there. People may genuinely want to be good, but seldom are they prepared to do what it takes to produce the inward life of goodness that can form a soul. Personal formation into the likeness of Christ is arduous and lifelong. Someone might say here, oh, here comes the religion part. Here comes the legalism, right? Give me my five things, right? I'm haunted by Athanasius's statement. Go back to that if you would, Bob. He became what we are. These words that we, and these two words, might become. That's not a foregone conclusion. That there is an invitation to become. But that's not necessarily a conclusion that will happen. It takes the participation of you being a part of that reality. Go back to that quote, if you would, from Foster. When you have an aim, it saves you from your practices becoming legalism, right? When the why is before the what. No one ever called an Olympic athlete legalistic because she was devoted to her practice day in and day out when no one was watching. No one ever said, what a legalist, that Olympian. They said, how beautiful. What devotion. You know why? Because the Olympian has a why. It has a vision for what could be. And she spends her life chasing that down in the practices, the habits, the routine, in order to live into the reality that she longs for. We admire that. Aim, name, practice. And then over time, over time, this cultivates a kind of quality of character. This is where virtue, this is where goodness, eudaimonia, as the Greeks would say. It's virtue and character and goodness, it's like the flowers of the soil that have been cultivated over time, and they begin to push up. Friends, on this journey of transformation that we're on, I think I just want to close this talk by saying this. Be patient with yourself. If God is patience, be patient with yourself. Be patient with others. Because virtue doesn't happen quickly. It comes over time. After you aim and you name and you practice, and you name and you aim and you practice, and you name and you aim and you practice. We have to learn to laugh at ourselves and to give grace. This is the spiritual fruit of faithfulness, which we're going to pick up next week. So as we move toward the table, think about that, from religion to projection to rebellion, this vicious sort of cycle that can lead to cynicism. I want to say this, that the participation that I'm suggesting this morning that will lead us into goodness, the participation with God, it begins with desire. I think maybe for some of us, the place to pray this morning isn't even thinking about all the details of what this teaching might mean. It's to think, God, I long to long for you because I've been so ensconced in tradition my whole life that I just have sort of calcified and built all these layers. Where's the raw desire for fresh contact with the living God? Maybe that's where you are and you need a new aim. Some of you are like, it's time for me to name some things. I got to get specific. Like, you've called me to name out things that I long for, name directions in my life that I need to grow and expand. Where am I neglecting to follow Jesus right now? Because life's just busy. And the third thing is, what practices? Maybe you're thinking, Lord, is there a practice? I've got to root myself into story. It's time for me to get back into your scripture and to remember my names, remember I'm beloved, and to live from that story of reconciliation that you've given for me. That's why we put the scriptures in the back of the sheet every single week, to read the same scriptures that people are reading all over the world. So I wonder what that would look like, or what practice God's calling you to in this next even month, thinking about preparing the soil of your heart for Easter morning. We are four Sundays away from Easter. What would that look like to just take a little sprint for the next few weeks? So one of our practices every week is the table. It's not arbitrary. There's an aim behind it. The aim is the encounter of the living God. We taste and we see God is closer than our breath. God isn't just an idea. God isn't just a sky God. God puts God's self in matter and says, matter matters. Your job, your family, your neighborhood, it all matters. God's constantly sort of poking God's head into those moments through everyday life. And the church every week gathers to remember that God comes through matter. And so we give ourselves to these things. We give ourselves to saying, God, I long to long for you. meet me at the table. Such a beautiful thing. Cultivate virtue in me over time. This table tells the story of the gospel.